This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. It's time now for our Africa update. While the Olympics make headlines, Darfur activists try to get their share of the spotlight. This week, Darfur activists collide with the Games in Beijing. Plus, a decade later, East Africans look back at Al-Qaeda's attack on the U.S. Embassy in Kenya. For more, we've got Bill Fletcher. He is a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and a former president of Trans-Africa Forum. Great to have you on, Bill.
Always good to be on.
So let's talk about the Olympics. I mean, a lot of attention on a lot of fronts, not just the athletics, but also the politics. Plenty of folks are questioning China on human rights issues in Tibet and Darfur, Sudan. For nearly two decades, China has been one of Sudan's largest trading partners. And last week, Chinese officials revoked the visa of former U.S. Olympic speed skater Joey Cheek. He's a co-founder of Team Darfur. That's a group of athletes working to raise awareness about the Chinese government's connection to the crisis in Darfur. So how do you think things are playing out? I mean, for example, the opening of the games, which was an enormously expensive pageant that was viewed as an artistic success, that got a lot of attention. Are the human rights issues getting a lot of attention?
Not really. I think that the Chinese government has done an exceptional job, actually, in putting together the Olympics. And part of what they've done is they've successfully been able to overshadow most of the political issues that people have attempted to raise. And keep in mind that in every Olympics, political issues are raised. There's nothing new about raising them this go round. There has been some U.S. media attention, obviously, around the issue of Darfur, around labor rights, but I think it's been pretty much contained.
Now, Bob Costas of NBC interviewed President Bush on Sunday and asked him about his meeting with the Chinese President Hu Jintao. And the president, our President Bush, said he urged China to use its clout to help ease the Darfur crisis. What has really been the U.S. position vis-a-vis China in terms of trying to, you know, negotiate with China on this issue?
Well, the U.S. has not wanted to push China too hard, in part because of the level of economic interdependency that exists now between the United States and China. It is true that the U.S. has been trying to get China to use its clout with the Sudan. But I think one of the things that many people in the United States don't appreciate when we're looking at China and its foreign policy is that they are very much affected by the whole notion of the non-intervention in the internal affairs of various countries. Now, for many of us, we may just assume that this is an opportunistic ploy, but it's much more complicated given China's history of having been torn up by European countries and dominated by the United States. So the Chinese are very, very reluctant to intervene, whether it's in the Sudan or anywhere else. And in fact, it's very interesting. When President Bush was criticizing the Chinese response, which could have been to say, look into your own house, President Bush, was simply to say countries should not involve themselves in the internal affairs of others.
So where do we go from here in terms of the U.S. relationship to China around these human rights issues? Because there is always this kind of static that goes back and forth between these two powerful nations, the U.S. and China.
I think it's very important, actually, to keep the pressure on China. But I don't think, as I've said many times to you in our discussions, that the Bush administration has much moral authority to do that, particularly in light of Iraq. But I think that people, regular people here in the United States, actually do. And that whether it's pressure that we put on corporations that are investing in China or just visible political pressure, that the Chinese do respond. They don't necessarily respond the way that many of us may think that they should, and they don't necessarily acknowledge that they're responding, but they do respond to pressure. And in fact, some of what they've been saying to the Sudan, the government in the Khartoum, over the last number of months seems to indicate that some of this pressure has been working.
I want to move on to another issue, which is the 10-year anniversary of al-Qaeda's deadliest terrorist strike against the U.S. on foreign soil. We're talking about the embassy attacks in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Nairobi, Kenya. Hundreds of people were killed or injured. And when you think about this, last week was the 10-year anniversary. This was a precursor, in a way, to the attacks on 9/11. Let's listen to a little bit of the U.S. Ambassador to Kenya, Michael Ranneberger, at a ceremony in Nairobi to honor the victims.
I truly believe that the fact that Kenya and the United States have both moved ahead to strengthen their democracies and to expand well-being for their people is probably the best honor we could possibly pay to those victims of the bombing.
Raila Odinga, who's now part of the Kenyan government and was the opposition leader, also spoke at the memorial.
We have terrorists in our midst still planning awful deeds. We must therefore never relax our vigilance against these extremists.
There have been some articles basically saying that 10 years later, some of the people who were injured in these attacks have not gotten compensation, are still living with injuries, financial losses. Aside from the symbolism, what does this anniversary really mean?
Well, you know, Fry, there's a very paradoxical phenomena that takes place in the United States when there are disasters. There's a period of an immediate outpouring of sympathy and support. You can see that after 9/11, or you could see it after the Minneapolis disaster, or the bridge disaster, or Katrina. And then what happens fairly quickly is what is described as fatigue. I wouldn't really describe it as that. But there's a lack of interest and a lack of commitment to the survivors. We certainly have seen that in 9/11. With the survivors, including the people that went to offer assistance. I think that what we've seen in Kenya and Tanzania is exactly this, but is compounded by another factor, which is that this took place in Africa. And when things take place outside of the United States, there is very often, unfortunately, a numbness that we have here, a reluctance to respond, or not a reluctance, it just... We disconnect. And I think, frankly, people have forgotten about this and think that it was, well, yeah, it was unfortunate, but it was basically just some Africans. So I think a combination of those two factors leads us not to think about the ramifications and not to think about taking care of the people that survived these disasters.
Let's move on finally to an issue which is very different. It's a question of one person's word against another's. It's the Horn of Africa. Ethiopia's biggest reggae star, Teddy Afro, is awaiting trial in a deadly hit-and-run case. His name is Tewodros Kasahun, I hope I pronounced that right, sometimes called the Bob Marley of Ethiopia. He is actually accused of hitting a homeless boy with his BMW and fleeing the scene. This guy is a huge star, and let's actually take a listen to one of his songs. Of course, there has been, a great reverence for Ethiopian culture among the Rastafari of Jamaica, and now you've got this reggae star. But at the same time, do we know anything? There's some question of whether or not this is a political prosecution or persecution. Do we know anything about whether or not that's the case?
We can only just surmise that given the length of time that existed from when this accident took place and the charges being brought, it's highly unlikely that this is just an accident or it's a coincidence. It's probably an example of political repression. And so I think we have to remember, we have to set this into context. We have a regime in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, that for quite a number of years has been extremely repressive against opposition. It has done what it can to play up to the United States, and particularly and most recently the Bush administration, to prove itself to be a loyal ally. But domestically, that is within Ethiopia, it's been very repressive of any and all opposition, whether demonstrations, the struggle of the Oromo people, or any example of people speaking up and challenging the regime. So I think that the circumstances would lead most reasonable people to believe that, yes, this was an act of repression.
All right. Well, we will certainly follow up on that. Bill, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
Bill Fletcher is a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and former president of Trans Africa Forum. He spoke with us from NPR's Washington, D.C. headquarters.